Rachel here, host of the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. In today's show, we're going to hear from two dedicated Strong Towns advocates who are working with their neighbors to fight a highway project in their city of Erie, Pennsylvania. Adam Trott is a Strong Towns member, an architect, and a longtime Erie resident who's passionate about seeing his city be financially prosperous for everyone who lives there. Roland Slade is a newer Erie resident with media chops and neighborhood know-how who has no less dedication to seeing his city be a place where everyone can thrive, regardless of which neighborhood they come from. Together, Adam and Roland are part of a community group called Connect Urban Erie, which is fighting a multi-million dollar road expansion project that would run a massive volume of cars along Erie's waterfront, an area that's already dominated by a large highway. Adam, Roland, and their neighbors have been tirelessly advocating to instead transform this waterfront roadway into a space where people can safely walk and bike and enjoy the beautiful asset of Lake Erie. This story is one that will be unfortunately familiar to Strong Towns advocates. How many of us can point to existing highways that have tanked the tax value per acre of the traditional neighborhoods that they're running through, or squandered the possibilities of something like a beautiful waterfront, which should be a community resource for all? How many of us have heard politicians talk about pouring millions of dollars into making those damaging roads even bigger, and all that while they claim that there is no money in the budget for things like sidewalks or parks? Adam and Roland are fighting that good fight against this road project in their city, with the hopes of creating a place where people can travel affordably on foot or bike, where people can easily visit local businesses, and where the city and the lake become prosperous places to spend time, not just to pass through at high speed in a car. I know you're going to learn a lot from this conversation about Adam and Roland's work in Erie. Make sure to stay tuned to the end, especially where they share a ton of fantastic pieces of advice for all of you out there who might be working through similar challenges in your cities. So with that, here's my discussion with Adam and Roland. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. I'm glad to have with me today Adam Trott and Roland Slade, two advocates in Erie, Pennsylvania. So welcome, Adam and Roland. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
To start, can you each just tell me a little bit about yourself and your community? Adam, why don't we start with you?
Well, I can give the older community and Roland can give the newer one, I think. I'm an Erie native. I went to Penn State School of Architecture, came out in 1984, did some of my early career up in Boston and returned to Erie to settle in 1990. And at that time, I brought with me the observations I made in Boston about how the guy's name was Cox, who ran the Boston Redevelopment Authority, and he was doing all kinds of things up in Boston to manage the growth up there. I felt, wow, we could, you know, do that here. Erie's a wonderful, gifted geographical location. We have a natural harbor. We're on, you know, the largest freshwater source in the world, other than the icebergs and the polar ice caps. And, you know, it's just an amazing setting that we have here. And it always perplexed me on why isn't Erie a more prosperous city, you know? Over the years, we've come to see why it's not prosperous. We have awful politics in Erie. And many cities point at awful politics as the barrier for cities to evolve. And that's what we have here. It's not that people don't want to do things. It's that they don't know what the right thing is to do. And they tend to do things that are 30 or 40 years old. But in my growing up here, it was a heavy Catholic-oriented community. The parochial school system was enormous, and lots of blue-collar. I mean, Erie was a heavy manufacturing town. The Bayfront reflected that. The Bayfront was mostly industrial-based. Now, here we are at 2020, and it's become a recreational-based Bayfront for the center and western parts, and the east part is where they've restricted the more industrial and port-like operations. So that means the east side suffers because their bayfront is not recreational and easily accessible. It's industrial oriented still, but the central and west side, they've converted to recreational, where a lot of the public amenities are, with the exception of a couple on the east side. So you have a dichotomy here of the west side and the east side. The east side is definitely lower income, and their amenities reflect that they've been dismissed for generations and generations. So at this point, there's those of us that we know it can be better as long as the attitude at City Hall gets better. And that's the biggest obstacle is trying to change City Hall. But yeah, I'm an architect. I've been practicing since the late 80s. I just love this town. The bones are incredible. My practice is very small. I have a boutique firm. There's just a few of us here. And that allows me to be incredibly active in the community.
Gotcha. Yeah, thanks for that story about your experience and your city. So Roland, how about you? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your perspective on Erie.
Well, I'm not an Erieite. I come way of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, roughly about 24, 25 years ago. With my first family, I spent the better part of 17, 18 years kind of just sitting back and just, you know, going through the flow, I guess. But as I got divorced and remarried and moved my new wife to Erie, Pennsylvania, and start raising a small children again, in my wisdom, I started to recognize things going on in the city. Me as a black man living in Erie, it seems as though the other black people in the city, there was twofold. Either their voice was being squashed or their voice wasn't being heard. So I decided to get involved in activism through my job at a Fortune 500 company. I guess you could still call us as a union man. I am a safety coordinator, and that gives me my passion for people. So I consider myself the leg as a media advisor of Connect Urban Erie, and working with Lisa Austin and Adam Trott. I am the voice of the people leg of this organization, I guess I could say, and connecting also while I'm still, you know, closer to 50 than I am 20, with a younger wife and teen daughters right around 20 and 18. I still feel as though I have the pulse of the youth. It's just my observation of Erie is, you know, not really having access to people who don't have vehicles. The politicians' lack of caring about how other people move around this city, and largely because they come from outside of the city to come work. The politicians that work in the city don't necessarily live in the city. I took note of that, and that's probably the disconnect, that they don't necessarily focus on the walkability as much as the drivability of the city. So that's what I noticed.
You've started to touch on this group that you're both part of, Connect Urban Erie, and I know that you all are doing various different projects and efforts to make Erie a stronger place. Can you tell me a little bit about this group that you're part of and how you guys got started? Either of you jump in.
Okay, so I'll start because I've been in from the beginning, and I can build up to when Roland came in. Erie Connect Plus Respect was the original group a few years ago that was founded to try and stop the removal of an 1,800-foot viaduct that stitched the north part of Erie's east side with the south part over an intense railroad corridor that serves hundreds of trains a day. It's a corridor between Chicago and New York. So this bridge was built in 1937, and it had been redone in 1950s and then, well, rather 1970s, and then they just totally neglected it, and it started to fall in disrepair. So they decided they wanted to just tear it down and get it off the books. However, City Hall showed that they only thought of it as a liability. They didn't understand that when the bridge was closed to vehicles in 2010, the neighborhood area repurposed it as a wonderful bike pedestrian only bridge. And it became a great bike ped connection between the north and south sides of that part of town, but City Hall didn't care. And so we were fighting that for several years. We even got a civil rights lawsuit going on it in federal court, but they were able to quash it all and get rid of the bridge, despite that we had proven that the cost to refurbish it was the same as the cost to demolish it. That's where we really grit our teeth, because it was just refusal to rethink the situation by City Hall. So we formed as Erie Connect Plus Respect, called it Erie CPR. And then after the viaduct, the Bayfront issue came up, and we repurposed or retitled ourselves as Connect Urban Erie, had a few people go out and a few people come in, and we're after trying to stop this Bayfront Highway from going in, where there is currently just a one lane in each direction going. They want to make it a two lane each direction and put it on steroids, make it like an interstate. So at that point, Connect Urban Erie came about, and shortly after, Roland showed up. So Roland?
I was working on a project with a local, I guess you would say, television program, kind of community access driven program. And she interviewed Lisa Austin. And I was a videographer at the time. And in this interview, I fell in love with her passion. One thing about Lisa that she's good at is she knows how to bring people in. This was in my transition period of really understanding what's going on in the city. So as I get pulled into this Viaduct project and doing some film work and interviews and things of that sort, doing some editing, I primarily work behind the scenes. But like I said, as great as Lisa is, she knows how to pull the greatness out of you. And one thing I have in me is I know how to talk. She's pulled me closer and closer to the forefront of all of this stuff. And I've become more and more an advocate for the people as we, like Adam said, as we transitioned from Erie CPR to Connect Urban Erie, this red flags just all over the place on this Bayfront Highway. And more importantly in all of this is having an understanding, like Adam even spoke in his introduction, is this issue that we're going to talk about is bigger than just the Bayfront. Transitioning from the Viaduct to the Bayfront really shows the lack of empathy that local governments, local city government has for the people's wishes, boots on the ground, and the structural racism that is connected to how projects are worded and how they're executed, I should say, in our city. And that's kind of where I land today. And that's why I stand firm with Connect Urban Erie and the work that we're doing.
So you've talked a lot about this highway project and how you guys are trying to fight it in a way that will improve your community rather than harm it. What have been some of the steps along the way in your community group, and where are you currently at with trying to fight this highway project?
If I could say that we've had victories in this particular fight, is that we were able to get or to force a public hearing. And I'm not sure the history of projects in the city and when public hearings have been forced, but this one, at least for the time I've been involved with our particular group, it was a major victory. It seems as though our activism is being somewhat listened to. So from a people's perspective, and of course, Adam can talk to the many different layers of details, I can just give you from a perspective of the people who are downtrodden and broken, There's a small group of us that are still holding on to say, let's keep this fight going. Right now, we're at the stage where in about, a week and a half, they're going to vote on do they want to push this one aspect of the project forward. And we are, circling the wagons to get the ears of the certain city council members to remind them the importance of the environmental assessment that we're asking for. We're not all particularly opposed to the projects, but as it stands right now with no environmental assessment, it does not really show the compassion for doing it the right way. Even though they can bypass this with the an exclusion, to us, we feel as though you still haven't done your due diligence because the project can bring massive harm to the area and you're going into it blind without this environmental assessment.
Adam, do you have anything else to add about kind of this process right now?
Yeah, I'll add a few things here. One of the lessons we learned in our fight with the viaduct was the critical nature of what the public narrative is. And we learned the hard way that certain people have much greater influence on the public narrative than other people. And in the case of the viaduct, it was City Hall administration versus the people on the ground that actually are impacted. So City Hall crafted a public narrative chock full of falsehoods. And unfortunately, the Erie newspaper, the Erie Times News, echoed them. Even though we proved to the Erie Times in two editorial board interviews that they were wrong, they didn't care because we didn't have any power. So they went and did the false information from City Hall. And so the public never really understood the issue. Now, fast forward to today, and what we have is we have call them local power brokers that have investments on future projects down on the Bayfront. And they only see the Bayfront Highway as it's got to become an arterial highway to help feed our development. Absolutely none of them understand urban design at all, because these folks are used to things like highway interchange developments, things along that nature where cars equals prosperity. So in all of this, there's been a lot of discussion about how cities work today versus how they were designed back in the 50s and 60s with Maurice Roedevall and Moses and their big planning on auto-centric cities. So they come to think of the Bayfront Highway as they need that for their developments to succeed. And where we're fighting this is in the public narrative, we're trying to educate the public on how cities work that are not auto-centric, but they're people-centric. And we even put out conceptual renderings of what it would look like to have a people's parkway instead of an arterial highway. And we get some traction to the point where we got votes on city council to hold up the process. And now we're seeing how the local power brokers are disparaging city council, calling them names and saying they don't understand things and they're going to impede Erie's prosperity. So there's a ton of political pressure for city council to buckle and just rubber stamp the thing. But so far, we have enough members on city council. They understand the issues on this and why it's important to not cut off the city from the Bayfront with an arterial highway. And it's an at-grade highway. You can't get around it. So here we are, like Roland said, it's a week from Wednesday, they're supposed to vote on whether to get out of the way of the project or whether to keep holding it up till certain aspects are redesigned. I will tell you that other than the City Hall officials And when I say that, I mean that separately from city council. This is the mayor and the administration. Those officials that are more like staff than they are elected officials, they just want to do things, make things happen, and to deliberate on things is annoying to them. So we have this chess game where PennDOT is the agent taking all the hits for proposing the plan. But PennDOT has said in various venues repeatedly, they're not the ones pushing the plan. They're just following their orders. And the orders really come from local leadership. And we learned that with the viaduct, and now it's rearing its ugly head again here on the Bayfront Highway. The power brokers of local leadership want the highway, and they don't want to reconsider what it will do to cutting off the city from the Bayfront, because frankly, they don't care what happens south of the highway. They want to feed their northern side developments. So that's the dichotomy that we have that we're trying to persevere through and get better heads to think more accurately on how these projects should be processed.
Yeah, I really admire your guys' persistence. Also, I hear your focus on really communicating the narrative of this story, that this is about the community, building places for people, for neighbors, and not just for cars. Tell me a little bit about the vision that you have for what that People's Parkway could be and what Erie could be if it was really more focused on people, neighbors, communities, rather than just zooming people through on their cars.
If PennDOT gets their way, they're completely focused on level of service grade. And that is how fast can we move cars and how many cars can we get through as fast as possible. So that's why they're ramping up the capacity of this highway. And what we're trying to get the public to understand is, even though PennDOT has said that their priority is bike and ped first, cars second, the actual project they're doing is 98% cars first, 2%, let's throw a couple pedestrian bike things in there. So what they've done is they've proposed an arterial highway that has on and off ramps and two double lane roundabouts at either end, at the east and west ends of their central corridor project, as they call it. And we've thrown up as many red flags and flares as we can, saying, look at double lane rotaries don't work for bike and pedestrian, no matter how you design them. They just don't work. And they don't care. They just want to get it done. And I've been on other conference calls and Zoom meetings with civil engineers from government agencies, whether it's state DOTs or what have you. And they've said they are graded on their performance by, when they have a project, how fast did you get it done and how much did you save money getting it done? Those are their two priorities when they do projects. And they're traffic engineers. So, you know, when you put it all together, you can see why they came up with what they came up with. But the problem is, once this highway goes in, and they've already done this on the east side of town, so we know exactly how this is going to play out. Once the highway goes in, then they're going to be deeply concerned about accidents, fatalities, things like that. So they're going to fence the highway off to keep people from shortcutting at different parts along this corridor. And you're going to end up with an incredibly foreboding barrier between the city and the Bayfront. So in our view, they should instead concentrate on getting the pass-through traffic, which is 80% of the traffic on the Bayfront Parkway is pass-through, not going to the Bayfront or downtown. It's to get to the other side of town. We're saying you build this highway and you'll be 90% pass-through. And by doing that, what's happening is you're cutting off any chance of north-south connections between the city and the Bayfront. So what we're saying is you got to get the pass-through traffic out of there. It wasn't there 20 years ago when they first opened this highway. when they built the highway, it created the induced traffic load of the pass-through traffic. So we're saying, go back to a better time. Calm this parkway down. Put tree lines. Put numerous crossing points for bike ped. Slow it down. Make it a wonderful slow ride along the bayfront, not a highway on steroids. And let the city connect to the bayfront it so desperately wants to connect to. So that's where we're at. And we've been mapping out desire lines between the city and the bayfront amenities and finding critical points where, yeah, there should be a bike ped crossing right here, right here, right here. But they don't want that. They've already got an amount of work into this, and they don't want to look back. They just want to get it done and log it into the accomplishment list. So, Rachel, what's been interesting is that we right now, the beachhead of this whole thing is that they want city council to approve the administration to start talking with the CSX railroad that they need to displace. It's in the way of their plan. And city council has to approve that for them to proceed. So city council has not approved them to proceed to talk to CSX yet, because city council, at least a majority of them so far, understand the other issues. And they know the minute they give that vote, everything is lost. There's no way to hold this project up from what they want to do. So where the thing is at right now. And that's the vote that Roland was talking about. That's a week from Wednesday.
Yeah, what's your vision for how this waterfront could more readily connect community, help people, feel at home instead of just driving through?
So I feel like I'm in a unique position as of late. You know, me and my wife, we have taken up in this nice, beautiful fall heading into the fall season, we've actually taken up walking together, and we spent a lot of time down there at the waterfront. And we have been navigating around, you're not going to be too familiar with the area, but basically down at Dobbs Landing, where is a centralized part where people come and kind of look at the lake, and along the library and one of Nick Scott's new hotels. It's interesting to me that the project as it is does look very inviting as far as the walk paths that are along the north side of the bayfront. The problem with that is that from when it was first projected to when we had the public hearing, they almost switched up on us, right? So they showed us this beautiful design, but it still did not address how pedestrians were gonna get from the north side to the south side of the bayfront. And it's very troubling to me that they tried to give us a project that did not address this in the budget. I know this is at the beginning stages and these pathways will come later. It's not pedestrian focused. So personally, my vision is if we are going to do something down there, then let's make it as walkable as possible. And in my vision, I would think that a Nick Scott would actually be on board. On the lower side of State Street, closer to the bayfront, there are bars and restaurants. How great would it be, the hotels we already have down there, which are two, and this third one that just opened up, how great would it be for a visitor to be able to exit the hotel without jumping in a vehicle and walk south of State Street to, patronize some of these bars and restaurants? And it will definitely bring the people of the 16501 and 16503 zip code down to the bayfront, the people who are already walking. It will have us have a nice area to congregate and have a more at harmony neighborhood. Right now, like I said, a lot of the people who work in the downtown area live in the surrounding counties. So there is no connectivity with the people, not just roadways, but with the people. And you know, we see wildlife, different birds and species and things, many rabbits in this area. It's nice to be able to walk and see wildlife without literally going to the woods. That's kind of like our little touch of nature right here in the city. So I think that a lot of people that are Erieites grew up fishing, grew up walking down to the waterfront and enjoying what Erie's, one of Erie's biggest attractions, which is Lake Erie, and have that bayfront area be somewhat, and Adam can attest to this, somewhat like peninsula, where, like you said, it could be, even if you are driving through, it's a nice, slow, wonderful drive where you can enjoy the, in the summertime, the bright sunlit lake. In the nightfall, we got one of the best sunsets, you know, probably in this, you know, in the state. And then as well as being able to see the people walking and biking, that is very enjoyable.
Yeah, I love that vision you painted. I can hear your desire for a connected city where resources like this waterfront could be fully utilized by everybody, where people are patronizing local businesses and people can travel safely on foot or bike and not have to need a car to get everywhere. And, you know, just where Erie is a place for people to live and prosper and not just pass through on a highway.
Let me just add this as well. I also probably twice a summer, we travel up to Niagara Falls, which is via Route 90, and you got to cut through. And we're talking about Niagara Falls on the New York State side. So we're talking about an American side, and we have to travel through Buffalo. And it amazes me how they put their highway directly on the waterfront. And there is just, that water is just so beautiful. And it seems though, I don't live in the area, so I don't know, but it almost seems like they have zero access to the water, at least along that stretch of highway. Adam, I'm not sure how many miles that is, and you could probably know better than me, but it looks like in that stretch of highway, they have zero access to this water. And that's what I'm afraid of. As you know, many cities are tearing up highways to make it more walkable and more friendly to people and congregation. And here we're going back in the dark ages of car-centric living, in the city living, you know, beltways around the city and thus and so. So I just wanted to add that as well, as we have a blueprint just north of us. And I believe also in Ohio, their bayfront, or I don't know if you want to call it a bay, but their highway goes right along the water where the people have zero access to it because they'll have to travel across a literal highway.
Yeah, what a waste, right, of that wonderful resource.
Yeah, Buffalo's actually working to reverse that now. They're doing a lot of studies to take down these highways that have gashed their city's access to the Niagara River waterfront. Cleveland, they're very remorseful about having done what they did, but I don't see anything that tells me they're as active to rectify it as Buffalo is right now.
So before we close, I want to ask both of you, I know that this is an ongoing process, that it's challenging, the fight is not over, but what advice do you have for other people who might be trying to fight similar road projects and trying to make communities that are more walkable, more bikeable, and more people-centered? Mm-hmm. Roland, let's start with you. What advice might you have for other folks trying to fight this fight?
From a boots-on-the-ground standpoint, with basically no understanding of how any of this works, I think that the first thing you need to do is try to get with an organization that's going to help you fight, one, but two, give you access to information that you'll be better off when you don't know anything. But from a single person perspective, is be active in city government, starting with city council. Make sure you know when your city council meets. Make sure you become a thorn in their side. Make sure you're speaking publicly. And if possible, because it does not work in our area, is get the local media involved. Never force them to try to pick a side, but always hold them accountable to being neutral and at least put the information out there. One of our biggest crutches has been just information, knowledge that people do not know. So many who we think actually may have given up or have been defeated, a lot of them just don't know because the vehicles that disseminate the information refuse to give it. Or when they do give it, they give it in such a way that almost hides it. So you have to be on the front lines of that point of view, and then also using what we have today, which is social media. Movements have started using social media. So if you can get a large social media following to follow your issue, that goes a long way because it puts pressure on the decision makers. And then lastly is try to make it go viral, is get national attention on it. One of our biggest victories was when the big bright light was shined with an article from Wall Street 24/7 that basically named Erie the worst, in I think it was 2017, the worst city for Black people in the nation. That set a snowball down a hill that was very, very helpful to be able to use. It set many other things in motion. So national attention is also very, very helpful.
Yeah, that's a great list of different advice. Connecting with other people in your community, getting media attention, and like what you said, be a thorn in the side of local government as needed. Adam, do you have any advice that you would share with others who are trying to fight a road project or something similar in their town?
Yes, we've been at it for over 7 years now. And some of the critical lessons we have learned is, first off, know the roles people have in the issue. It was years before we really understood that the Department of Transportation running the project was not the decision maker. They were an agent that was the focus of the public narrative, but the decision makers pushing the project were able to stay hidden in the back room. Understand that it's the local leadership that really decides these things, not a Department of Transportation. They readily will admit they'll do whatever local leadership wants. They don't want to be seen as Big Brother forcing something that the locals don't want. So understand that local leadership is the key to how things happen. So knowing the roles of the people and learning who's in the back room pulling the levers is very important. Second thing is always stick to facts. There's people that want to manipulate the public narrative, and the last thing you want to do is give them openings to disparage your position because you're using anecdotal or conjecture. You're always safe just putting the facts down. They can't refute the facts. The third thing is relationships. You've got to establish relationships. Anything that gets done, especially in a town like Erie, only gets done through relationships. And finally, it's when you know you're on the right side of the issue, hopefully that's enough to give you the strength you need to persevere through all the challenges, because it's a big lift to try and get projects to revisit, rethink, redesign. So just put as many facts in your quiver as you can and have at it, and be emboldened by the fact that you know you're on the right side of the issue.
Yeah, well said. Thank you both, Adam and Roland, for your time, for sharing your story, for all of the advice that you've shared. Just really appreciate the chance to get to hear from you, and I wish you well on keeping fighting this fight. For our listeners, I will share some links and news articles and other stuff that's related to this ongoing story in Erie. But otherwise, thank you both so much, Adam and Roland.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks for having us. Truly appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Adam and Roland in Erie, Pennsylvania. I know I was both frustrated to hear how long their process has taken and how far they still have to go, how many people have put roadblocks up against them, no pun intended. But mostly I was inspired by their persistence and the way that they've worked together with neighbors and just kept going to fight this project. And I really believe that they will achieve that People's Parkway. So we'll keep checking in with them to see how their progress goes. Last time in our inaugural episode, I invited you all to send in voicemails telling us about the ways that you're making your town stronger, the small things you're doing to take action in your communities. We had a pretty quick turnaround on getting this episode edited, so sadly, y'all didn't come through for me, didn't send in your voicemails real quickly. So I'm giving you another chance, and of course you'll have a chance every week to do this. Please send in a voicemail. All you have to do is record a short memo on your phone and make sure to also share your name and where you live, then email it to rachel@strongtowns.org. That's R-A-C-H-E-L @strongtowns.org. We'd love to hear what you're doing in your community, and no action is too small, truly. Before we close today, I want to remind you that Strong Towns is a member-supported organization. We simply could not be where we are in this movement without you guys. And if you're taking action to make your city stronger, we also ask that you take a small step to help this nonprofit keep working. Keep working to serve you. Keep working to provide great resources, like I hope this podcast is beginning to be. So head to strongtowns.org/membership to sign up today. Our memberships start at as low as just $25 a year, and I'll give you a hint that we are going to be doing a member drive in a few weeks. So if you join us now as a member, you can just skip all that stuff and feel great about knowing you're already part of this movement. So thanks to everyone for your support. We'll see you back here for more of the Bottom Up Revolution on our next episode. Take care, everybody. ¶¶